Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paramahacharya All Siddhara Siddhishi Shimad His Divine Grace Savaya Chalanada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Jai Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Jai Namacharya Shilohira Stapur Jai Param Sai Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Go Bhakta Vrindiki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Go Bhagavata Sayam Kund Radha Kund Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Maturidam Ki Jai Jagadatha Sami Ki Jai Yamunamai Ki Jai Srimati Lasi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindiki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So we are reading from the fourth canto, chapter 28, beginning with text 47. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Om Gana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shir Gurave Namaha. What? Oh, chapter 4, canto 4, chapter 28, text 47. So we are reading from this section because this section specifically deals with the subject matter of disciples' mood when the spiritual master leaves the planet, and it uses the allegorical story of a wife whose husband has passed away and she's completely devoted to the husband, and makes the comparison right there. And it's a very appropriate comparison, and Srila Prabhupada, quoting from the Acharyas, because the Acharyas also talk about this, gives us some instructions on how to act. And these verses were the verses that were read over and over and over again when Srila Prabhupada left the planet in 1977, and also when I went to Fiji and was counseling the devotees of Tamal Krishna Maharaj when Tamal Krishna Maharaj left the planet. And I forget, what year was that? 2002. So this is a standard to read this, because these are specifically Prabhupada's instructions how to act, how to think, how to act. I mean, of course, it comes from the heart, and it's actually a test of one's, I guess, devotion and dedication at that particular time, because this is an inevitable occurrence in everyone's life, unless you happen to be like Jayananda Prabhu or Haridas Thakur. Jayananda Prabhu, he begged Srila Prabhupada to give him the blessing, and very few people know this. Jayananda Prabhu begged Srila Prabhupada to give him the blessing that he could leave before Prabhupada, because he couldn't bear to see the departure of Prabhupada. And Haridas Thakur also requested Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the same way. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did the disappearance celebration for Haridas Thakur. So it's 4:28:47. Okay. So let me read the Sanskrit, and then I'll comment on the purports. It's actually several verses here that are appropriate on this particular day.
So text 47. Atmanam shochati dinam abandum viklavashrubihi astanavascha svipinde shushvaram prarudodaksa. Be now alone and a widow in that forest. The daughter of Vidarbha began to lament incessantly, shedding tears which soaked her breasts and crying very loudly. So this is, of course, the allegorical story of Paranjana, the continuation of the allegorical story of Paranjana. And let me read Srila Prabhupada's purport. Figuratively, the queen is supposed to be the disciple of the king. Thus, when the mortal body of the spiritual master expires, his disciple should cry exactly as the queen cries when the king leaves his body. And then Prabhupada clarifies, however, the disciple and spiritual master are never separated because the spiritual master always keeps company with the disciple as long as the disciple strictly follows or follow strictly the instructions of the spiritual master. This is called the association of vani, words. Physical presence is called vapuhu. As long as the spiritual master is physically present, the disciple should serve the physical body of the spiritual master, and when the spiritual master is no longer physically existing, the disciple should serve the instructions of the spiritual master. And of course, this particular allegory here is in line with, in India, what was traditionally called the Sati rite. In the Sati rite, if the husband passed away, the wife would voluntarily leave her body or enter the fire. And, of course, nowadays that's illegal because the women were being forced to jump into the fire, which is not appropriate. Because she couldn't live. I mean, there's so much devotion between the husband and wife, which you don't really find nowadays. There was so much devotion between the husband and the wife that neither could live without the other. And nowadays, of course, you do find certain exceptional cases in which one person passes away, and then within the next day or two or next month or whatever, the other person leaves their body. These are exceptional cases. And in the case of the Pandavas, when King Pandavas and Kunti and Madri, when Pandu passed away, it was decided that Kunti would remain alive because she had the mission of her husband to accomplish. And the mission of her husband was to take care of the five Pandavas. Whereas Madri would not have been able to take care of that particular mission because she was partial to her sons, because they were, of course, two wives of Pandu. That was Madri and Kunti. And Kunti treated, actually, Nakula and Sahadev, the sons of Madri, actually practically better than her own sons, so because she had the right attitude. So this is an important comparison. Because she had the right attitude, she stayed in this world, and Madri left with Pandu. So this is, but as I said, this sort of devotion you don't see in married relationships so much in this world anymore, except in exceptional cases. So as Prabhupada is commenting here, that one's life, for example, those of us who are initiated by divine grace of the Prabhupada, our lives are actually dedicated to Prabhupada's mission. I could say for my own self that there's no purpose in life unless serving Prabhupada's mission. I mean, I don't have any other purpose. I couldn't think of another purpose. Certainly to eat and sleep, and of course sannyasi don't mate. To eat and sleep. I mean, what's the use of it if it's just eating and sleeping? Eating and sleeping just for surviving. As Bhagavatam says, what's the use of a long life like the trees who live sometimes 5,000 or 10,000 years, like the Prabhupada would comment about the California redwood trees that are so old and so big that they actually can dig tunnels through the trees and your cars go in both directions. So what's the use? Or Bhagavatam also mentions about bellows. Bellows meaning something that the people, the blacksmiths, used to use when they made horseshoes, you know, bellows, a pump. So a pump breathes. And the Bhagavatam also says the beast eat and discharge semen. So what's the use of such a life unless there's an actual purpose? And so we thank Srila Prabhupada and those of us, or those of you who are initiated by Bhakti Chumars or other spiritual masters, can thank your spiritual master for giving you a purpose in life. You know, otherwise, if you think it's purposeless. You know, like Shakespeare said, what, life's a poor player who struts and frets his time upon the stage and then is heard no more. Or you can become like an existentialist who think, you know, basically there's no purpose in life, right? Or you make your own purpose. I mean, sometimes the existentialists say, you know, you make up your own purpose, and whatever purpose you make up is just as good as anyone else's purpose. Or you could become an Epicurean or follower of Charvaka in India, you know, beg, borrow, or steal, but get yourself some ghee. Or Epicurean means eat, drink, and be merry. I mean, that is the purpose of hogs and dogs, basically. And human beings who act like hogs and dogs are worse than hogs and dogs because they have more abilities, right? If someone acts stupid and they're actually intelligent, unless they happen to be an avaduta, then that's not appropriate. So anyway, so our spiritual master has given us a purpose in life, something to live for, something to focus on, something to wake up in the morning and be enthusiastic about. You know, just like I was thinking this morning, you know, we wake up in the morning, I'm enthusiastic, I go to the temple and Mangalarti and everything like that. And if Prabhupada hadn't done that, I mean, why would I wake up? Isn't it? I mean, what's the reason for waking up? I mean, you wake up so you can go to work, or you wake up so you can go to school, you wake up so you can, I don't know, why would someone wake up? Better to sleep. Of course, that's ignorance. But I mean, in any case, I mean, what's the impetus? The impetus, of course, in the material world is the mode of passion, where when it wakes up for the proverbial carrot that's being held out in front of him, you know, like the donkey and the carrot. That's the impetus. But when you have a higher purpose, that's transcendental goodness. You can just actually think every day it's the same purpose. It's really nice. Not today I'm waking up because I get a new computer. Or tomorrow I'm waking up because I get to go to the beach. I'm waking up early. We get to go to the beach and go swimming on July 4th and risk my life without social distancing, isn't it? So these are crazy purposes. I mean, at least passion, you do have some day-to-day purpose. So anyway, so we thank Srila Prabhupada and those of you initiated by Bhakti Chumaraj or other great devotees, we thank our spiritual master for giving us this reason for living. Very important. So when the spiritual master passes away, we concentrate on that reason for living. That keeps us going. Otherwise, I mean, what's the meaning of life? When Prabhupada passed away, of course, all of us basically collapsed and were crying. And then those, many of us, or perhaps the majority, thought, "What now, what do we do?" That's the question. You know, after the grief period, what do we do? And so the spiritual master, while he's with us, he draws us to him in a mood of devotion, like Bhakti Chumaraj did. That's one of the spiritual master's duties, is to draw, not simply give instructions, but to draw the disciple. And during the final pastimes of Bhakti Chumaraj, we see that he was really drawing everybody's attention to him. And Prabhupada did the same thing. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj did the same thing. And, of course, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he passed away very suddenly. So that's a different type of pastime. But in any case, you know, one can actually see Krishna's hands in the way that the spiritual master passes away. There's a reason for that. Some rascals may criticize and say, this is suffering or it's karma. You know, this is nonsense. It really upsets me when people say these things about a great devotee passing away, because even neophyte devotees don't suffer from karma. What to speak of great devotees who are simply daivam prakritim ashrita, as Bhagavad Gita says, mahatmanas tumam partha daivam prakritim ashrita bhajantyananya manaso gatva bhutadam aviyam. It says the devotee is engaged in the internal potency. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivam prakritim ashrita. He's taken shelter of Krishna's internal potency. How do we know that? Bhajantyananya manaso. He doesn't have any other activity than worship or serving Krishna. So, therefore, one should be very careful in their attempt, their mundane attempt, they shouldn't do it, to analyze the words, instructions, or activities, or pastimes, or apparent helplessness of a pure devotee. It just is not appropriate and is highly offensive. So when pure devotees are put in those circumstances by Krishna, and it's directly Krishna, then it's for many different reasons. Many different reasons. Like sometimes you may see a pure devotee is very sick, and he or she may be experiencing the highest bhavas in Krishna consciousness. Like you see Prabhupada leaving this body on his in his bed in Vrindavan. And how can you understand what was going on through Prabhupada's consciousness, in Prabhupada's consciousness? You can't. And we oftentimes project our own mundane understanding and think that if we were in this situation, that's how we would feel. No, it's not like that. You know, sometimes you say, well, he's in pain. How do you know? How do you know? Maybe the disciple is in the pain of, maybe the guru is in the pain of separation from Krishna. Just like Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri in the final days of his pastimes was crying out. And for some, like Ramchandra Puri, it appeared that he was in pain, right? Ramchandra Puri tried to preach to his guru, telling his guru what? Just meditate on Brahman. When Madhavendra Puri was crying out in pain, oh my Lord, I have not reached Mathura. But it was that pain was actually transcendental. It was a spiritual emotion, the highest spiritual emotion of Vipralamba. So he was crying out, and Ramchandra Puri had the gall, the audacity, to criticize his guru and say, just meditate on Brahman, you know, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatman, Sochati Nakankshati, even quoted the Bhagavad Gita at his guru. And the guru said, Madhavendra Puri said, I have not reached Mathura, and now this rascal has come to harass me. He said, get out of here, I don't want to see your face anymore. So there's an instance of projection of mundane mentality upon the mentality or upon the pastimes of a great pure devotee. So we have to be careful about that. So anyway, so these are pastimes. Take it like that. When the pure devotee is leaving the world, it's a specific way that he or she does it in order to accomplish some specific purpose of Krishna's. It's as simple as that. And it's instructive for us. So it's very instructive for us. And in many ways, also as Prabhupada said, when he was lying on his bed in the final days, he says, don't think this won't happen to you. And, of course, we remember the verse in the Mahabharata where Bhishma says, the most, actually, it's not Bhishma, sorry, it is Yudhisthira Maharaj says, the most wonderful thing is, ahani ahani bhutani gacchatiya yamalayam. Most wonderful thing is we see everybody else go and we don't understand and we don't think there's a possibility that we're going to go. So many, many different lessons. Let's continue reading here because this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam is very instructive for us. Utishto tishta rajashe imam udari mekalam dasyu bhya kshatra bandhu bhyo bivyatim patum arhasi. O best of the kings, please get up. Get up. Just see, this world is surrounded by water and infested with rogues and so-called kings. This world is very much afraid, and it is your duty to protect her. So going on with the metaphor here is that a Krishna-conscious king would actually be in charge and responsible for any sort of impropriety in the kingdom. And if there was no king, then even in those days, things would really go haywire. Like in the case of even when Vena was killed, things went really crazy in the kingdom. So there has to be a king or a proper president or a proper executive head. Prabhupada would say an executive head to make sure that everything is going well. So the same thing happens when a great devotee passes away, unless there's others to make sure it doesn't happen. And it certainly happened to a certain extent when Srila Prabhupada left this world, which is ISKCON history. So purport, when an acharya comes following the superior orders of the Supreme Personality Godhead or its representative, he establishes the principles of religion as enunciated in Bhagavad Gita. Religion means abiding by the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Religious principles begin from the time one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the acharya's duty to spread a bona fide religious system and induce everyone to bow down before the Supreme Lord. One executes the religious principles by rendering devotional service, especially the nine items like hearing, chanting, remembering. Unfortunately, when the acharya disappears, rogues and non-devotees take advantage and immediately begin to introduce unauthorized principles in the name of so-called swamis, yogis, philanthropists, welfare workers, and so on. So this is the danger that has to be avoided. Because when Prabhupada was on the planet, many people were dependent on his physical presence. And when Prabhupada was not on the planet anymore, they had not grabbed on to the instructions of Prabhupada, which is very important, most important, actually. Prabhupada said the physical presence is not permanent of any of us, but to speak of the acharyas. And so we need to grab on to the instructions and the example these great devotees set during their pastimes. And if we don't, we had many devotees of Srila Prabhupada leave because they had not understood Prabhupada. It was more of a, let's say, sentimental following of Srila Prabhupada. So when the acharya disappears, rogues and non-devotees take advantage. And Prabhupada said, actually, human life is meant for executing the orders of the Supreme Lord. And this is stated in Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, text 34. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyajimam namaskuru. Mame vaishasi yuktvayivam atmanam matpurayana. Engage your mind always in thinking of me and become my devotee, offer obeisances and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. The main business of human society is to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead at all times, to become his devotees, to worship the Supreme Lord and bow down before him. The acharya, the authorized representative of the Supreme Lord, establishes these principles, but when he disappears, things once again become disordered. So it is our, and of course the disciples of Bhakti Chumaraj's, responsibility to make sure that things do not become disordered in his sangha. The perfect disciples of the acharya try to relieve the situation by sincerely following the instructions of the spiritual master. At the present moment, practically the entire world is afraid of rogues and non-devotees. Therefore, this Krishna conscious movement has started to save the world from irreligious principles. Everyone should cooperate with this movement in order to bring about actual peace and happiness in the world. Prabhupada, of course, is also making indirect reference to what happened to his spiritual master's organization after he left the planet. After Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur left this world, what happened is that there was an immediate, desire to do something which was against the order of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which was to appoint an acharya to vote. Actually said, acharya cannot be voted in. Acharya is someone who is self-effulgent, recognizable immediately by everyone, like Srila Prabhupada was and like Bhakti Chumar is. So, and therefore, there was voting, and then one acharya had some difficulty, and another acharya had some difficulty, and there were court cases, who was in charge of what, or how many mouths or temples the people were in charge of, and then basically, it disintegrated. And Srila Prabhupada, he was begging that his disciples, that his godbrother, would help him with some man or some facility, and his godbrothers basically asked him to leave the temple. What to speak of giving him facility? They gave him two or three dhotis or something like that and asked him to leave the temple, even though he was taken to such a humble position, willing to actually edit his godbrother's newspaper, his Krishna conscious newspaper. He just was asked to leave. And then Prabhupada had to do everything on his own. So for this particular point, this very much strikes Prabhupada in the heart. And we also had so many struggles when Srila Prabhupada left this world. And it took a lot of determination and even some political action to rectify things in the movement. That's the whole history of ISKCON. So we could learn, as they say, if you don't study history, you're going to repeat things. So we should learn from these things that, yes, now is the moment. If our spiritual master passes away, just take a vow. I'm going to dedicate my life to his desires. And then there's no separation. Like Prabhupada would often say that he was never separated from his spiritual master. He was always with his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So we'll read a little bit more. Evam vilapanti bala vipane nugata patim patita patior bartu rudat yashun ayavar tayat. That most obedient wife thus fell down at the feet of